Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover in this audio Ezra chapter 2. It's 70 verses long, but it's going to be a very short audio. My notes are only 2 pages. It consists mainly of a roll call, if you will, or a roll of the families of Israel, of Judah, who are leaving Babylon, going back to Judah after Cyrus in our last chapter, which is our context, the last chapter, chapter 1 of Ezra. We see Cyrus's famous decree, which is in probably 539 BC, in which he says, okay, exiles, you can go back to Jerusalem. Now, I'm not going to read all these people to you, but I will read the first 1.5 verses. Ezra 2, this is verse 1 through 60, the first part of that long list of names that are going back to Jerusalem. Now these are the people of the province who came up out of the captivity of the exiles whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away to Babylon. The people of the province is talking about the province of Babylonia. And these people returned to Jerusalem and Judah, each to his city. These came with Zerubbabel, Jeshua, Nehemiah, Sarah, Reliah, Mordecai, Bilshan, Mispar, on into almost infinity, with their numbers given with each family. The only two names I'm going to point out to you are Zerubbabel and Jeshua. Zerubbabel was the leader of the exiles. He was later to become the governor of Judah, the governor of Israel. We're going to call Judah Israel now. The northern 10 tribes are gone. The only thing that's left is Judah, and so Judah represents Israel. Now, Zerubbabel is actually listed in the lineage of Jesus in Matthew 1, verses 12 and 13, and Luke 8, 27. That means that Zerubbabel is in the line of David. He had the right to be a king, even though he was only a governor. Actually, no Davidic king ever ruled after the exile until Jesus came along. But even though he was only a governor, he was still in the line of David, which is, of course, is interesting and important because of the Davidic covenant that was made in 2 Samuel 7 when Nathan prophesied that God would put descendants on the throne of David and establish a covenant forever. Now, the next person that's mentioned in verse 3 of all these returning exiles is a man named Jeshua. That's probably Joshua. He's referred to many times in both Ezra and Nehemiah, the books. He's probably the high priest. So now we drop down to Ezra chapter 2, verses 61 through 63. Of the sons of the priest, the sons of Habea, the sons of Hakaz, the sons of Barzillai, who took a wife from the daughters of Barzillai, the Gileadite. Unlike Catholics, these Jewish priests were married, and he was called by their name. These searched among their ancestral registration, but they could not be located. Therefore, they were considered unclean and excluded from the priesthood. The governor said to them, that's Zerubbabel, said to them that they should not eat from the most holy things until a priest stood up with the Urim and Thummim. Now, these priests who were named, I'm not going to mention their names again, they couldn't find their names located in the registration of priests, which proved to everybody that such and such and so and so was a priest. Now, I'm surprised that the records weren't destroyed in 586 when the temple was destroyed. You would think the records would be kept in the temple, but maybe they were kept in family homes. I don't know, but they had records. They looked up in the records, and for some reason, the names were not there. That might indicate that perhaps the records were not kept well. Perhaps the records had gotten disturbed because of the invasion of the Babylonians. And if so, that might account for why the priests couldn't find their names there, these particular priests that were just mentioned. At any rate, they couldn't be priests. Verse 63, Zerubbabel says, not only can you not be a priest, you can't even eat from the sacrificial offerings, the portion of those offerings that are allotted to the priest for their upkeep. Now, Zerubbabel was being extremely strict. He was stricter than Josiah was when Josiah had to deal with priests of Yahweh who sacrificed on the high places, on the shrines and the hillsides, who sacrificed on those high places rather than in the temple at Jerusalem. What Josiah did in that case, he wouldn't let the priests serve in the temple, but he did let them eat of the sacrificial offerings that were offered by the people to the priests. That's mainly the fellowship offerings. The priests were offered a portion of those fellowship offerings, peace offerings, We read that in 2 Kings 23:9. The priests of the high places, however, did not come up to the altar of the Lord in Jerusalem. Instead, they ate unleavened bread with their fellow priests. See, they ate unleavened bread. They couldn't serve at the altar, but they could eat. And eating unleavened bread is a technical term for eating food in general, which included the sacrificial offerings, the portions which were allotted to the priest. But Zerubbabel didn't even let these priests, who had done nothing wrong, they didn't do anything as wrong as offering sacrifices on a high place instead of in Jerusalem. That's pretty irregular, pretty illegal. These priests just couldn't find their names in the register. But Zerubbabel is very, very, very keen to keep the law here as they're trying to start over. He did allow them to come back into the service of the priesthood if a priest would stand up with a Urim and Thummim and pronounce them, yes, he is a member of the priesthood. Now, this Urim and Thummim have been talked a lot as we've gone through the Old Testament. I have described it basically as a black and white stone in the pouch of the high priest. You pick up one stone for yes, white stone for yes, black stone for no. As a down and dirty description of the Urim and Thummim, because nobody knows exactly what it was. But since then, I've found a passage in Wikipedia that describes the Urim and Thummim pretty good, I think. Quote, the passage, referring to another passage, 1 Samuel 14:41, does describe the Urim and Thummim as being put into the breastplate, which scholars think implies they were objects put into some sort of pouch within it. And then, while out of view, one side, if the Urim and Thummim was a single object, one was chosen by touch and withdrawn or thrown out. And since the Urim and Thummim were put inside this pouch, they were presumably small and fairly flat, and were possibly tablets of wood or of bone. With the view of scholars that Urim essentially means guilty and Thummim essentially means innocent, this would imply that the purpose of the Urim and Thummim was an ordeal to confirm or deny suspected guilt. If the Urim was selected, it meant guilt, while selection of the Thummim would mean innocence. Or you could say yes and no. Thummim is yes and Urim is no. No, he's not innocent. Thummim, yes, he is innocent. Or Thummim, yes, he's a priest. Urim, no, he's not a priest. And of course, that implies that these Israelites put their total trust in the sovereign God to control the lot, or to control the drawing of the Urim and Thummim. I really think that God sort of condescended to the Israelites. This does seem pretty superstitious, but it was a dark time back then as far as Revelation went. They did have prophets every now and then, but the prophets are spread out over long periods of time. And so I think the Urim and Thummim was an act of grace on God's part to give them guidance if they would just trust in God for that guidance. But at any rate, we see how careful Zerubbabel is about the distinction between the sacred and the profane, between those who can be priests and those who cannot. We go now to Ezra chapter 2, verses 64 through 70, and we will finish this chapter. The whole assembly numbered 42,360, besides their male and female servants, who numbered 7,337, and they had 200 singing men and women. It's interesting that of all the things that you need when you're starting over, you got to have people singing. You might think that's a luxury, but there is nothing better than to get cheered up by music. You remember Little House on the Prairie and how Laura Ingalls Wilder's dad was always playing that fiddle on that desolate prairie landscape? Well, they had 200 singing men and women. Now, of course, well, let me keep reading. Verse 66, their horses were 736, their mules 245, their camels 435, their donkeys 6,720. Some of the heads of fathers' households, when they arrived at the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem, offered willingly for the house of God to restore it on its foundation. According to their ability, they gave to the treasury for the work 61,000 gold drachmas and 5,000 silver minas and 100 priestly garments. Now the priests and the Levites, some of the people, the singers, the gatekeepers, and the temple servants lived in their cities and all Israel in their cities. Notice in their cities, it wasn't just Jerusalem they returned to. They also returned to cities around Jerusalem. And notice in verse 70, the singers, gatekeepers, and temple servants, those are Levites. That's who did those jobs. Levites did those jobs. Now, the servants in verse 64 are split out from the numbered Israelites. So apparently they were not of the lineage of Israel. They were aliens. The 200 singing men and women I just mentioned is not consistent with Nehemiah, who has 245 singing women. And that just lets us be aware that all these numbers are subject to copyist errors in the manuscripts. Numbers are notoriously difficult to copy accurately. Ezra has a grand total of 49,897 people coming, the Israelites plus their servants. Nehemiah ends up with 45 more than that. But again, it's close enough for government work. It's numbers, and numbers are notoriously difficult to copy, as I just said. Now, we see in verse 69, according to their ability, the heads of the families gave money to the temple treasury to rebuild the temple. Well, it was the treasury that was going to be used for the temple. Wherever that treasure was kept, I don't know, maybe in Jerubbabel's house, maybe. But at any rate, it was according to their ability that they gave, and they gave a good bit. That standard of giving according to their ability is the same standard that's used in the New Testament for New Testament giving. 2 Corinthians 8:3-4, I testify that on their own, according to their ability and beyond their ability, they, this is referring to the churches of Macedonia, Paul is, they begged us insistently for the privilege of sharing in the ministry to the saints according to their ability. Ladies and gentlemen, this short chapter is now finished, and we are now prepared to go to chapter 3 in our next audio. In chapter 3, we will see the returning Israelites rebuilding the altar in the temple. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.